This is the AYG List with April Yvonne Garrett, a part of the Tavis Smiley Network on Blog Talk Radio.
On the AYG List, I talk with fascinating people, some at the top of their game, others still climbing, all possessing an uncommon commitment to owning their stories and achieving their visions. I'm not a journalist. I'm a deep thinker, a conversationalist. I won't be engaging my guests as a passive, neutral moderator. I have a perspective, an opinion on just about everything. I also navigate sometimes complex conversations that unpack and contextualize current events with thoughtful individuals who represent a diverse array of well-informed and passionately articulated perspectives. In this space, I hope to deepen, broaden, and sometimes even shift my own opinion by opening myself up to the thoughtful insights of others. I invite you to join me on this journey.
Hang out with April on Facebook, peek into her world on Instagram, and follow her on Twitter at the AYG List. Visit her inspiration, lifestyle, and social commentary blog at theayglist.com. And now, April Yvonne Garrett.
Good afternoon. This is April Yvonne Garrett, and welcome to the AYG List. Today, we talk about gratitude, and I am so excited that my friend and confidant and writer extraordinaire, activist extraordinaire, teacher extraordinaire, and pastor extraordinaire, Carl Kenny, joins me today. Carl, welcome to the AYG List.
How's it going, April? It's good to join you. I have to say up front that one of the things I'm grateful for is you and your vision and for this wonderful, wonderful opportunity to be with you today.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. I was moved to do this show because it's been a really interesting year on so many fronts, politically, with regard to race relations in America, with regard to so many social justice issues. And yet, I think I've been seeing in a lot of my social media feeds, so many people are grateful. I've been seeing folks all month long posting things on their pages and encouraging other people to at least once a day post things that they're grateful for. So I wanted to provide a space today for listeners and folks who have been enjoying the show and the profiles that I've been doing on the great folks that I've been bringing to you to share with me and to share with others things that they value. And Carl, I actually wanted to start with you today. I know that this year you've seen some changes from the work that you used to do in Durham and moving you to a new location. So if you want to talk a little bit about things that are happening with you and what you're most grateful for.
You know, I'm sitting here in the lobby at Landmark Hospital. My father is here doing some rehabilitation after amputation of a foot. And you know, I left my life in Durham, North Carolina, to take care of my father. And like thinking through that process, and you know, initially it was a grappling of one of those dark nights of the soul where I didn't want to leave the comfort, a friendship, and things I was familiar with there. And, you know, wonderful, wonderful work as a writer there. But in having made that decision, I'm discovering that the things I'm most thankful for are my family, my father, who has poured so much into me, loving me and supporting me. And I mean, I think I've learned through that process that, you know, we often pause to give gratitude for the things we've earned, the things we have. But I think the real gift is the things we give up. You know, giving up, we gain so much. And so sitting here in this lobby and looking at the logo of Landmark, a great place, and I'm also thankful that my father has the kind of benefits that allow him to be here.
Mm.
You know, he worked hard. He's 77 years old, and he has done well in having the kind of health care that allows him to be here, and there's so many who don't have access to that. So, you know, I'm just thankful to be in a place where I can be with my dad and learn more about him.
Yeah, yeah, that's a gift. I think a lot of us in our age group are starting to face those issues with our parents and the job that we now owe them, you know, to take care of them and to make sure that in their twilight years that they're taken good care of. And we've seen a lot of the repercussions of that in, you know, the political sphere that we're dealing with, you know, the healthcare reform and the end of a substantial portion of SNAP benefits and how that's affecting people. I've been present in doing this show and during this period of time as we give thanks and show gratitude that we also show empathy and compassion to those around us who do not have. And one of the things that I've done through my social media space is encourage people to really think about proactive ways that they can help folks who are in need, and not just kind of for show. Because, you know, during this time of year, basically from, like, you know, Halloween to Christmas, you see celebrities and athletes and all these folks doing these really great toy drives and things of that nature, and
right,
giving away turkeys, and everybody's doing it in front of the screen. But when those cameras are gone, the need is great. And by all accounts, all of my friends who are working in that industry are saying to me, not only is the need great, but it's increasing by like 50%. They're seeing an increase of people who are coming in to food pantries, people who are coming in for safety net services. So this is actually also an appeal to my audience that you think of really generative ways to be present, to show up, to volunteer, give food that you would actually eat, give food that thinks about the health needs of the people who were involved. Oftentimes folks who are in this situation are getting food that's old, that's not, you know, doesn't have safe dates on them, that aren't healthy for them, and we want to make sure that they're trying to get that nutritional value, especially for the seniors and the kids that they're taking care of as well. And that you do it throughout the winter months, throughout the summer months. It's the need is constant now. The need isn't just around those times of which we've kind of classically thought about that. So that's one other thing I wanted to throw in. I'm looking on the Facebook page because I've asked our friends of the AYG list to share what they are grateful for. I'm going to read a few of them. Dana Weaver, one of my childhood friends, says, "I am grateful for life, sound mind, and awesome friends." Mariam Barami, a friend of mine from Kenya, says, "I am eternally grateful to my father for providing me with the ability to get a great education and to appreciate what a gift it is. Every possession we have can be stolen from us, but not what you store in your head." Sounds like he taught her well. Jenny Vander Linden, who is one of my amazing guests, who's a cancer fighter and extraordinary, says, "All of those that love and support me through these times that I struggle with." And my friend Crystal LaRoche, who's an attorney in New York, says, "I'm grateful for my family and friends, often a very blurred line. I am thankful for the treasured memories of yesterday, the miracle of today, and the potential that only the future holds." And her favorite quote about gratitude is, "You pray in your distress and in your need. Would that you might pray also in the fullness of your joy and in your days of abundance." I think that's really brilliant. That's really brilliant. I mean, you really get a sense that people are grateful for things that they have that are kind of intangible, not like necessarily the things that they own or the stuff that you're going to be bombarded with for the next month and a half, but, you know, the intangible things that money can't buy. What is your sense about that?
Well, you know, I think one of the things we're facing in this shifting in the economy is the things we no longer take for granted. You know, we're no longer taking for granted that we'll gain employment with a company and stay there for years and retire with secure benefit package. You know, we can't take that for granted for so many that we know, and even ourselves have gone through shifts in life. You know, our lives have shifted radically because of the shifts in the economy, and we see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is a sense that we're more grateful about the relationships that we own, the relationships that own us, and we become more of a spiritual kind of people. I also think that as we witness the news, we watch it, we hear it, we read it, we're becoming more aware of those with mental illnesses and how those mental illnesses are strapping their lives and their decisions. And we see so many tragic events within in this culture that we're a part of. And not many of that has been caused by our thrive for more. And those who don't have it this season is a season in which so many people are broken because of what they are not able to do for their children. I think we're beginning to pause and say, you know, I'm thankful for the things that I cannot measure in my bank account. You know, it's my family, it's my friendships, it's having love and clinging to it in a way that really makes life more meaningful. Those things are becoming more important to me, and I think they're becoming more important to people that I'm close to.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like we have callers, so I'm going to invite this person in.
Yeah.
Hello, 617.
Hello, it's Rachel.
Hey, Rachel. This is my friend Rachel Move. Rachel, you're on the air with myself and Carl Kenny, and we're talking about gratitude. You have had such an incredible year, and I'm happy that you've taken the time to call in today. What are you most grateful for, Rachel?
There's a lot to be grateful for. I'm grateful for my situation, and about a year ago, my situation was really different. I was traveling around the world, and now I'm back, and I think it's made me more grateful for all the things that I have. And just
what
grateful that
to
I
travel
get to...
When you were traveling, what were you doing when you were traveling?
It initially started off, I was with a group of teachers who went over to India to study nonviolence and how nonviolence is taught at schools throughout India. Mm-hmm. And then I was inspired by not having a job to go back to continue on traveling, and I ended up spending 6 months traveling throughout Southeast Asia and Australia and New Zealand. And it was a life-changing experience. I'm definitely grateful for that opportunity. And it brought, I think I definitely came back a changed person. I'm just grateful for that I still have been, you know, have everything I need now, even though I took 6 months off of life for a little while.
You also have to do an incredible program this summer I know of. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how that had an impact on where you are right now?
Sure. I was actually a member of this group called the James Lawson Institute, which took place down in Nashville. And we got to study, sort of really just be together. It was a group of 40 activists and organizers who are committed to social change through nonviolent methods, based a lot on the ideas of Gandhi and King, and also using the civil rights movement and the SNCC organizers as models of how to create social change. So James Lawson was there himself, along with Mary King and Erica Chenoweth and a bunch of other really amazing researchers and people who are there. And it really motivated me to – I've always been an advocate of social change and obviously an advocate of nonviolence, but it was encouraging to see people out there doing it every day, fighting for so many different causes, and also just getting to hear real stories from James Lawson around – the struggle, but also the, you know, benefits and the, obviously, like, the great part about fighting for change and watching that change come about. It was very encouraging.
So. You had a quote that you shared on the page about gratitude. Would you like to share it with the audience?
You can share it. It's fine.
All right, cool. The quote is, as we express our gratitude, we must never forget that the highest appreciation is not to utter words, but to live by them. And that's a quote by our late former president, John F. Kennedy, Jr. So, yes. Rachel, thank you so much for calling in and sharing with us, and I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving season. And I am absolutely grateful for your friendship and for your support.
Well, thank you for having me. Have a great Thanksgiving.
All right, you too.
Bye.
You know, you're really getting a sense of people putting that gratitude in placement of not just, you know, their world, but the world that they share with other people, which I found really compelling. And a lot of the conversations that I've been having with people about gratitude and that sphere is real, that they realize that their actions go beyond just the people that they care about or the people that they interact with every day. I think that's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, I think that we're discovering that there's an emptiness related to our assumptions. You know, we assume that happiness could be attached to this material world. That's why I'm so inspired by the Pope. You know, I know you posted things on your Facebook about Pope Francis and his attack of capitalism and the assumptions of capitalism and the assumptions of power and privilege that have minimized so many people. And we're beginning to question those type of assumptions and find worth in other places, and those places, again, are relationships and the service to a larger community. I moved a lot recently by my children, my three amazing children, who they often teach me through their sacrifices and willingness to move outside of those kind of assumptions. You know, they're not really motivated by the world of prosperity. They're motivated by more by their principles and their willingness to make a difference. And I think that we see that a lot more with this thriving generation of young people, that I'm really inspired by them, their desire to go back and make a difference.
You know, some people would say just the opposite. I mean, I know that you and I, we have crafted a different type of universe to interact with, but I think some people would say it's just the opposite. Oh, they're just completely consumed with materialism and hypersexuality and, you know, really pejorative notions of malehood and female womanness. And I think that people are really, really daunted by it. I find myself daunted by it. I mean, you often see in my social space and in space where I use my voice, I come out as pretty conservative about a lot of these things because I see what the direct impact is on the younger community. And yet I think also it's around the times when we actually stand still, you know, and think about it for a moment. And if we're really honest with ourselves, we allow for that space to access where that connects with the values that we hold near and dear and what we know to be true as far as what is fostering something really generative and positive and something that's really not. Trying to find the space where we have some ability to have some fun and enjoy it, but also realize the power that we have to kind of create the world we want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Pope does that really, really well.
Yeah. You know, there are these pockets of hopes. I do think that you have an obsession among many young people and also among their parents. This compulsion for stuff and the craving for gratification beyond the spirit. But I think there's this glimmer of hope among young people, and I think there are older people of my generation and even younger than my generation who are beginning to understand that there has to be more than this. This is not really satisfying me. I mean, I've come to the conclusion that the things that matter most are the people you love and how they love you. And I think the young people, there's a pocket of hope among the young people who begin to see that the world that I want to be a part of, it transcends that world that I assume would be when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
true.
Grateful for that. I'm grateful for those pockets of hope. I see it a little bit in the music. I think there are these pockets even in hip-hop of geniuses who are beginning to communicate something a little different than what we were, me and you and others, are really angry about prior to some of these new pockets of hope.
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't want to get to a point where, you know, you're such an old fogey that you don't like anything that comes out of the younger generation or out of what the current moment has to offer. You do have to figure out a way to kind of balance all of that in the expression of wanting them to thrive and to articulate what is meaningful for them. But you also want it to be kind of connected to their understanding of the power that it gives for perception. And some of those perceptions lead to behaviors that we've seen, unfortunately, in some of the more troubling social spheres that folks have occupied, the Trayvon Martin stuff and the things with LGBT communities being really vilified and that kind of thing. So I think we do have to be careful about the freedoms that we have, because the freedoms, you know, came with a price. And if we don't protect them, you know, we won't get them back. So that's a very, very real thing for me. Let's see. What more are people saying about gratitude and cyber world? I'm just amazed. I just had the opportunity. I have to share one story of gratitude beside, you know, the obvious, which has to do with, you know, my family immediately, my mom and my immediate family, who are incredibly supportive. And Mr. Smiley for giving me the opportunity to have this medium. I'm grateful for those things. And this not being at all possible without the support of people like Barnett Carroll and Alan Sparrow and the voice that you hear every week before I come on, Troy Johnson and Russ DeLynn and some people who were there in the very beginning and my sister girl crew and all that. I think that one of the ways in which I have been profoundly connected to the gratitude that I have is through the folks who have shaped me spiritually and intellectually. And the American Academy of Religion conference was in my hometown this weekend, And I had an opportunity to go to my alma mater's reception, Harvard Divinity School, and see one of my beloved professors, Harvey Cox, and I hadn't seen him in years. And just being in his presence and actually talking to him for a little bit, it just all comes back to you how much intellectuals kind of really invest into the students that they teach. And he was very connected to the work that I've done since Harvard and has been supportive of it. He has been on a Civic Fame panel before and that kind of thing. But I am very, very blessed because I've been in an environment intellectually from Kenyon to Columbia to Harvard where the professors that I've had are very important to me and still connected to me. I can go back to Kenyon today and have coffee or dinner or go to the home of a professor that I had over 25 years ago, and they still know me, they still know my business, and they still know my mind, and they're invested in my progression. I think that's a pretty extraordinary gift to say, you know, when you go back, you can talk to Vernon Schubel or Royal Rhodes or Don Rogan or any of those people, and they still know what's going on with you. And I just saw my other mentor, Cornel West in New Jersey, surprised him at a lecture, and to be able to kind of be with him, and he still wears my Civic Frame scarf around his neck every day, which is quite an honor.
Right.
To have those types of connections with people who are invested not in you just as sort of a miniature version of who they are. And you have a lot of people who are powerful and who have powerful gifts to give, but they're very obsessed with the people who come after them looking like them and thinking like them. But having people really invest in you so that you develop your own voice and,
right,
and that you learn how to think on your own and that you learn how to shape a world that affirms who you are and who you're trying to be. Very extraordinary gift, and I got that in all of those environments and in some places in Baltimore as well, and I am stunned by how that reifies me every day. And one of the things that I'm majorly grateful for.
And I think there's a gift in that that we can learn from. You know, there are a number of my mentors and mentors who've come back and communicated they see genius in me from John O. Franklin when he was alive and Sierra Lincoln and others who were able to communicate. We see it in you and use that, you know, stir up that gift and use it in a way that's going to make a difference and make me proud. And I think there's something to be said about that. I mean, what we can't see in ourselves, they were able to see it before we could.
Right.
And we have a responsibility, I think, to share that same gift to the young people who come behind us, that when they're grappling just to make it, we have to say, wait a minute, we see in you something that's important, and
absolutely,
you need to stir that up. And you never really know how impactful that can be on their lives to be able to say that.
Absolutely. That's so true. And then both of us are church people.
we're church people.
We church folk. We're not. I'm not modern day church folk. That's a whole nother show.
we're on the radical edge of the church, and we both have that seminary kind of training that forces us to look at theology and, you know, social justice in a different kind of way. I'm grateful that I have friends like you who can share those kind of conversations when I'm fighting for gay rights and when I'm fighting for social justice and looking at women's rights and all the other cruelties of this world that this ache in my soul, that I'm not alone in that. I think it's good to know that you're not alone when you're fighting for truth and justice.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I always tell this story when people ask me about my faith. I remember the first time I heard Dr. West speak at Harvard when I was a student there, and someone in the audience asked him, are you a philosopher or are you a Christian first? And he said he was a Christian first, which I was really compelled by that response.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I remembered having this conversation with my mom because I grew up in a small Baptist church, Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in Baltimore, Maryland, very small church. Everybody knew everybody's name, multi-class church. This is before the mega church phenomenon. So you had black folks who were, you know, from the black elite and the guardsmen and the boule and the lynx, but you also had regular old working class people who had grace and dignity and commitment, like my mother. And we were all in the same place. And my mom was one of those people who said, look, if you're going to do it in high school, you have to do it at church. So if I did student government at a high school, I had to do the usher board at church. And I was very involved, and I started the NAACP chapter at my church. But I remember when I chose my faith on my own, I was in, I think part of it was when I was at Kenyon, but I remember it being a very strong thing for me in Atlanta when I was really going through being a Black woman in a Southern city who had very Northern sensibilities. It was very, very challenging.
Right.
And I remember the day when I realized that, you know, all of the training of going to church and being on time and making sure your gloves were cleaned and, you know, going to vacation Bible school and all of those things that you had to memorize, that they came in to help. And I remember going through a very, very bad day and having a certain hymn come to me, and I could literally see the Burgundy National Baptist hymnal, and I could see the actual page. I saw the hymn 27 in Blessed Assurance, and I knew every word on that page. And that's when I realized that it wasn't just something that, you know, my mom pushed down my throat. It was then something that I had accepted for my own truth, and a truth that I share very liberally with other people, but also allows me to interact with other people who have different faith convictions or no faith conviction at all. In a way where I see them and I respect them and I can hear their voice, but I can also be encouraged and be empowered and be enriched by that foundation that my mother so stringently and lovingly gave me. So that's one of the things that keeps me sane, keeps me kind, which is a hard thing to do sometimes when you're faced with trauma, and keeps me focused. That's probably the best gift my mother has ever given me. And that has been reinforced by my late grandfather and my grandmother. And that I can share with other folks who have faith and folks who have chosen not to have faith as well. It's been a very, very powerful access for me to be open and present to other people in their joys and in their pains. It's been a very, very powerful thing for me. So that's another thing that I'm extraordinarily grateful for. So we're about to wrap this up, but I wanted to ask you if you had any special quotes that came to mind to you when you thought about gratitude.
When I thought about gratitude, I posted a quote on your Facebook. We can only be said to be alive in those moments of when our hearts are conscious of our treasures, so that our true lives burst into true meaning when we understand that we are blessed with great treasure. That's been very meaningful for me over these past few months, and giving up so much and giving away all my resources. Giving away my furniture, giving away my art, giving away most of my music, not all of it, and keeping my books, giving away most of my clothing, and moving home with nothing. That the greatest treasure is my love for my dad and my mother and my sister and the special people in my life like you and others who hold me as a person to be respected and loved and lift me up daily with prayers and walk with me in this journey that I know God has not finished yet. And that's a special gift.
Right. That's really, really powerful, because I know that that was something that you were dealing with in a profound way, and you tried to figure it out, and you're really working through that. And I appreciate you sharing that with me and my audience today. I hope it does inspire some other folks. The other thing is that your quote also indicates that what's important is internal first, that you're not looking for that from the outside of you, that, you know, it has to come, it has to be generated from you before other people will actually see it and then work with it, and then and that creates opportunities for you to flourish.
Correct.
Right. I
got
that.
That's the journey, though.
Yeah, that's the journey. So I want to thank all of my initial guests on the show, and I have to thank them by name before I close. Dillard University President Walter Kimbrough, NAACP Legal Defense Fund President Sherilyn Eiffel, contemporary artist Tim Okamura, National Center for Civil and Human Rights CEO Doug Shipman, scholar and mental health advocate Monica A. Coleman, Kenyon College President Sean Decatur, outgoing NAACP President Benjamin Todd Jealous, cancer fighter Jenny Vanderlinden, black farmer and homesteader Denzel Mitchell, Andrew Goodman Foundation President David Goodman, and Children of Promise NYC President Sharon Content, and comedian, author, and techie Baratunde Thurston. So, my quote about gratitude that I actually say every day and that I share with other people is, if the only prayer you ever say in your entire life is thank you, it will be enough. And that's by Meister Eckhart. I say thank you all the time at the end of my show, and people laugh at me sometimes because I say it more than once. I'm always like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I can never say thank you just once. I always have to say thank you several times. I think there's power in gratitude. I think that gratitude opens the floodgates to give you more and more and more of what you desire to have earnestly in this life. And I am super grateful for this show, and I'm super grateful for my wonderful audience, and I'm super grateful for all the people who constantly pray that I find a space in this world for my voice and that I always honor my calling. And you're one of those people. So, Carl, thank you so much for joining me on the AYG list. And I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And we are sending great thoughts to you and your father and your family.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the AYG List with April Yvonne Garrett, a part of the Tavis Smiley Network on Blog Talk Radio. The AYG List posts every Tuesday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. April would love to hear from you on Facebook and Twitter and invite you to take a peek into her world on Instagram at the AYG List. Also, visit her inspiration, lifestyle, and social commentary blog, theayglist.com. Thank you for listening.